that have been going on have been funded. And when you talk about, you know, a program like that, then unfortunately, and we've been hearing, I know you all presented last year at our similar session, and to hear that that phenomenal program is now going unfunded for at least 3 years, that's really disheartening for me. But it's all right. We know we have a lot of work before us, and we'll continue that. And it's just nice that, again, all of the various collaborations that we've now heard, all of this this uprising, this synergy, you know, the nice thing is that these communities know how important these programs are, and we hope that they will continue in some way, shape, or form. But I'll put my plug in that we certainly need a lot more focused dollars and resources in this arena. I'll be talking about healthy environments and child care facilities and our preschools program, as we call it HECCP. Again, I'm Inse Obut Witherspoon with the Children's Environmental Health Network out of Washington, D.C. We're a national nonprofit organization with a basic yet vital mission to protect all children from environmental hazards. And again, we do feel that children have that fundamental right and don't have that power and leverage and the funding to do so. So it relies on us as the appropriate responsible adults to take care of them. In order to achieve this mission, we work in four main goal areas. We work to stimulate prevention-oriented research, again, in pediatric environmental health. That is the fundamental basis of all the work that we do. Everything that you'll hear today and anything that I've ever spoken on or a board member has always been grounded in the science, and we really feel that that's important. Of course, there are a lot of research gaps in this field, and we have a long way to go, but we certainly have learned enough over the last, you know, decade or two. We use that increased awareness among a wide variety of stakeholders. We started out training healthcare professionals actually around the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 80s. The demand, the swelling came from them, you know, that they don't really get this type of information in education in their core training. Unfortunately, fast forwarding 16 years later, I wish I could tell you it's a much more integral part, rigorous part of their curriculum, but it's not. We've come a long way. There are a lot of other groups besides ourselves now training healthcare providers. But when you think about how important it is for a healthcare provider to serve as a champion and advocate for a child to the extent that they can, and there are many that are willing to do so, we need to be coming from as many angles as we can in this child care arena, as well as many others when we talk about protecting our children. We now work with legislators, policymakers, parent groups, environmental justice leaders, and the list goes on and on. So wherever we can get to with our small staff, we're there. We, of course, educate those subpopulations. I mean, everyone's coming from pretty much from the same space. And when I tell you that a healthcare professional pretty much learns less of what you guys have learned today, generally speaking, that's a very real comment. So when you think about the wide gamut of expertise that's out there that deal with children each and every day in our school systems and beyond, it's pretty vital that everyone really needs to have at least a core understanding of why this field is so vital. And, of course, we really try to promote prevention-oriented child health-focused policies at the national and state levels wherever we can. So, again, why environment? I'm sure you guys have a good sense, but we know that there's anywhere, we've seen quotes from anywhere from 75 to 85,000 chemicals spewing into our environment on a regular basis. And the sad part is that we don't know a lot about those environments. Most of them have not been adequately tested for their impact on our health, and specifically the health of vulnerable systems like children. And we know that our children spend up to 90% of our time, well, we all spend 90% of our time indoors, and children at times too, more so less, but I mean, generally speaking, it's a high percentage that all of us are spending indoors compared to maybe our parents and our grandparents before them. So we need to be looking at not only indoor, but also outdoor air quality and what that means. So when you talk about school systems and daycare systems, that makes those built environments so particularly important. And we also know we're looking at single and multiple chemical effects. So it's not just what is that pesticide doing to that child? What is the pesticide, the cleaning agent, and what's going on in the rug doing to that child? So it gets very complex, but of course we try to start at an elemental stage and work our way up, but there are some challenges before us. We also know that these are some key contaminants that we're finding in our schools and our child cares these days. When we talk about air quality, you know, again, all of our presenters before us have talked about mold, smoking at times, especially when you're looking at a home childcare facility. To what extent do you go? When we've actually had providers ask, well, I don't smoke when the kids are there, but of course I smoke when they're not there. But I mean, public health will tell us any smoking that's going on in that home environment is getting into everything, the upholstery, the carpets, and those children are coming in and breathing in that secondhand smoke, you know, and seeing the detriments. And we do know that we now see asthma-induced triggers and symptoms due to just secondhand smoke exposure, which is unfortunate. of course, we're seeing chemicals from art supplies, cleaning supplies, pesticides, and we're going all the way from just irritation to in rashes and watery eyes and irritation all the way through to neurological brain development. So this is very serious. Radon, when we go in and we talk with our providers, 9 times out of 10, they haven't even heard about radon and certainly haven't tested for it. But when they find out it's the second leading cause of cancer, lung cancer in the United States, their eyes kind of, you know, glaze over. Lead, of course, we know, unfortunately, what lead has taught us, and we do consider childhood lead poisoning to be, unfortunately, the cornerstone, because we do, I personally don't think there's anything more that could come out about lead that we don't already know. But yet, in this country, we still have a ridiculous amount of children that are lead poisoned, and we know that it's mostly related to our older housing stock and our older buildings, our schools and facilities. It's still the paint as the main route of exposure, the old lead paint and the chipping paint. So when you see, again, pictures like Philadelphia, I would imagine, you know, older row house probably also had lead paint. And so you see that chipping, it's very discerning. Of course, we know children are particularly vulnerable. They're still growing and developing, so all of their musculoskeletal, their neurological, their biological systems are all very vulnerable to anything that you or I as adults may come into contact with. And their little bodies cannot metabolize these toxins. They were never made to be introduced into a natural biological system. So they stay in their bodies much longer than ours. And just by nature of who they are and their behavior, they're down here as they should be. They're exploring, they're crawling, and they're putting their hands in their mouth. And that's perfectly natural and logical development. But unfortunately, even that behavior places them at harm's risk. Most of us aren't running around, crawling around, and putting our hands in our mouth. And again, we know that these chemicals that we're exposed to are not adequately tested, specifically, again, I'll say it again, for the specific vulnerabilities of a child. Now, we look at childcare settings, and this is what kind of engaged us back in 2004. We know that when you look at where children spend the majority of their time, they're spending up to 60% of their time, children below 6, in some form of childcare facility. That's home-based, center-based, you name it. And they're spending up to, and sometimes more than 40 hours a week in these facilities. So it makes, again, these providers really key advocates for the health and well-being and safety of children in the most formative developmental years of a child's life. And again, we do know that when you look at licensing requirements, and the licensing requirements are state by state, so they vary state by state, which has been hard and challenging at times to deal with. We also understand that child care providers and staff basically are not receiving this type of information. And we receive this information not just from logical information that we're getting from partners all over the country, but back in 2003, 2004, thanks to the Annie Casey Foundation, we did a telephone assessment. We didn't get to every state, but we got through half of the country. And we were able to interview a Head Start representative, a child care licensing representative, and what they call a child care resource referral representative. They're really key and have been a fundamental partner in all of the programs that we've been running. And they could all verify, even though some of them know a little bit more about asthma, know a little bit more about lead, know a little bit more about radon, and do work accordingly, across the board, there's a general just not lack of information in this field. And the demand, the swelling, the support to really engage their providers has been so positive as a result. We also know that most states do not require the child care providers to have early childhood education and pre-service qualifications related to any of these issues we're talking about. So it's not like they're doing anything wrong. They're perfectly in the guidelines of what their states require. But we should not, you know, that status quo should not be enough for us. And we also know that only 12 states require environmental tests for lead, asbestos, and radon. So, for example, we've been working in Georgia, and I was very surprised to find that a child care provider can enroll a young child and have no indication of whether they've had a blood lead test at all. So that really starts leading to some interesting information when we talk about the links that we've seen to learning disabilities. So we took this information and we started a pilot program in California, actually around the San Francisco Bay Area, because that's where our California office was at that time. And we worked with Alameda and Contra Costa counties around the Bay Area. And our fundamental idea here was to train child care providers and the administrators, so even a facility manager, if there was one, on, number one, identifying environmental hazards. You know, first, do you even know what they are? You know, kind of the spiel I just gave you, why children are vulnerable, how do you even identify what are some hazards around you? Second, how do you then remove and or alleviate or eliminate those hazards in a cost-effective, realistic way? We know we can't tell them to just change their roofs tomorrow. We know we just can't tell them to just pull up the rugs. This is not realistic. What are some, and there are some things that they could do today, tomorrow, and phase in over time that are still cost-effective. But also, how can we link them to local resources that are working in these arenas if they do have a lead issue? Helping them connect and learn and get to know the names of their public health childhood lead professional in the area, or their Mid-Atlantic Center, or their Pediatric Environmental Health Center on Children's Health, which there's one in every region of the country. And then third, we want them to identify those useful resources, because this is a long-term approach. This isn't something that's just going to take 2 or 3 years or however long we're funded to get into these different states. This we want to be incorporated for the long term into the licensing standards, quite frankly. So over 120 childcare providers were trained in February 2006, and that was our smallest, very kind of seed-oriented amount of support at that time, and we realized that really there was a need all over. So again, our audience are childcare providers, preschool teachers, and facility administrators, if there is one on site. We have a curriculum that's based on 15 peer-reviewed, what we call modules, topical modules. So there's one on, you name it, art supplies, radon, air quality, pesticides. We have one, a newer one on plastics that just came out this year due to all the press and concern around our plastic and phthalates in our plastics, and specifically plastic baby bottles. And this curriculum has been approved by the Centers for Disease Control, so we are able to take this all over the country now, which has been great. We offer continuing education units in each state that we're in. So again, we work with the child care licensing body in each state to go through their very rigorous program. All our trainers are also approved, so they get 2 hours of continuing education units by completing this program with us. And as far as our reach, right now, we have now expanded into, we've been in Georgia for the last 2 years, thanks to support from the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry and the Centers for Disease Control. And we've now also started in Washington, D.C. We're now in the second year of a 3-year project, and we also have some support there from EPA, Indoor Air Quality, as well as a local foundation called River Park Friends in Southwest D.C. We've now also just expanded this fall, as of September, into Texas, and it's nice because our curriculum now will have the opportunity to be translated into Spanish for the first time, all of the materials, as well as our assessment, pre- and post-assessment modules. To date, we've trained over 400 providers, and we've been in contact with at least 74 centers specifically, and our expected reach as of right now is anywhere from 5,000 to 6,000 children and their families. Because inevitably, by going to the child care providers, we're asking them, once they feel comfortable, to then start sharing this information with their parents in whatever ways of communication works. A lot of times they're sending newsletters quarterly, monthly, weekly, whatever communication. As they're slowly phasing in changes, we want them to be sharing those changes and the thinking behind those changes with their families. So our DC program began in fall 2007. And this one was much different than our Georgia program. We go in and we have students from the George Washington School of Public Health, which we provide very modest stipends, but they go and do this legwork for us. We go in, first we enroll. So we have a local task force that helps to guide this project, and there are folks from Head Start, the DC Licensing Office, DC Department of Health, the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Environmental Health, and a wide variety of local child care professionals, as well as some other nonprofits that help to guide us on the DC neighborhoods and communities and how best to be most effective with this program. They then first provided, you know, quietly, some recommendations of some centers that we might want to approach to get started. We also have a long, huge database of every single licensed childcare center in D.C., so we also did a random selection. Our goal was to enroll at least 20 centers each year. So at the end, we'll have at least 60 centers. As you see, we are already over 74. So we go, we first approach these centers. We give them, you know, the one-on-one on why we're doing this, why we feel that we would like their involvement. They agree or not agree to participate. From that point on, and to date, everyone has participated that we've approached except for one provider. We never met her. We talked to her on the phone, and she was just clear. She just said, look, I'm just trying to keep my doors open right now. I've been closed about 3 or 4 times. I guarantee you I have everything you're looking for and more. But she wasn't, you know, we had a very candid conversation. She said, look, maybe in a year from now, but she was very realistic, unfortunately, of what was going on. Of course, on our side, it was concerning because there are children going into that center each and every day. And she made it clear that she's the only center within a certain mile radius of that community. These are folks that don't have cars, rely on public transportation, so they need a provider that they can relatively trust in the neighborhood that they can drop off and pick up relatively easy. And I'm sure she's a fair price for everybody. So, but beyond that, everyone that we've approached has engaged. Now, there's been some resistance, but people have certainly been involved. I mean, they get a little nervous when you come in and sit down and start asking them a wide range of questions. Our assessments include a pre-assessment and a post-assessment. We go, we sit down at the pre-assessment meeting. We help if they want to, if they want us to answer any questions, any concerns. We try to do that one-on-one. I also will go as the executive director at times, especially for ones that we feel need a little bit more support. Then we'll do a walkthrough of the facility. At that time, the facility manager might also be there as well, and we'll just observe and take pictures and ask questions. Then we come back and we do the follow-up questions. That's all the pre-assessment. Then 3 months from that time, we will go and do the same thing, and in theory, they would have started to phase in some of the areas of concern. In between the pre and the post, we have a training of the child care staff at the facility manager, and even parents that might want to attend, and we try to schedule these accordingly, according to everyone's schedule. Then also, we provide an action plan, a list of recommendations, a very thorough action plan, where we go through and we thank them, again, for opening up their centers for us during nap time or whenever was most conducive, and we break down the areas of most, we thank them for the areas that they're doing well in, then we break down the areas that we think could use some work. And then during each of those parts of the action plan, we specifically link them to local resources in D.C. that they can call on either for financial support or just general support and further education on whatever those topical areas are. That piece is different than any of the ones we've done in California and Georgia so far, so we're really proud of that. These are all the members of the task force. And again, so far we've enrolled 20 D.C. childcare facilities. We're now in the year two, so we're starting on the second 20. As of right now, we're still conducting the post-assessments from year one, so unfortunately I don't have the official data on that. And again, we do have all these folks that have been trained, the center directors, the providers, and the facility managers. The response has just been overwhelmingly positive. They're asking, when's the next training? What's the next phase? Can we get into some of the specific areas? Can you do one on plastics alone? Can you do one on safer cleaning alone? I wish we could, answer all of those requests, but certainly they know that without a doubt we're here for them for the long haul. We also have provided a presentation at the National Association of Child Care Resources and Referral Agencies Policy Summit. We've been certainly making those bridges with the child care professional networks that are out there to help them get on board. A lot of these providers look like the APHA is for public health employees, look to their professional associations for guidance and support. And if they see that their professional associations are on board and encouraging them to be a part, that's, of course, a win-win for everybody. We also have been asked, I've been asked to sit on the Environmental Quality Panel for the revision of Caring for Our Children, National Healthcare and Safety Performance Guidelines for Out-of-Home Child Care Programs. We were just asked to participate in that. Through that program, between now and February, it's going to be kind of rigorous, we're going to be helping to evaluate the standards of 340 child care standards. And of course, I'll be pushing for the environmental components as much as possible. So this opportunity has provided a wide variety of engagement for us, which we would not have had the opportunities for otherwise. These are my two little Bambinos here, my daughter and my son, and just two of many of millions of examples of reasons of why this work is so important. Looking forward, again, we're launching our Texas program, translating the work into Spanish, and our real goal here is to get into every state that we can that will allow us to continue to test our materials and our tools and to learn as much as we can and to bring as much of this to the local communities and states. We have other states that are kind of banging at the door, but we just don't have the funds yet to go in. But the real goal here is to create a national framework, a national program that incorporates environmental considerations into childcare licensing and accreditation in this country, and I think we really will get there. And at that time, I will open us all up into questions for the entire panel. So, Kobe.
I just want to make an announcement about the surveys.
Yes.
I don't know if you...
Everyone should have them on their chairs already. Yep.
So, I'm Dr. Wilson. Thank you for the time, and it was a great presentation. I came in and out a little bit. Just want to say I'm sure I'll let you the section, and we have this session and other sessions are very informative, and to just expand the greatness for next year's conference, expand this section, really do need the survey filled out. So the session code and your badge ID, if you fill it out, you have opportunity to win a free registration next year's conference. If you're interested in joining the session, learning more about these issues, and really being part of the policy development and collaborations across the country,
Thank you, Sokobi. Also, I wanted to, you know, it's hard. These are wonderful programs. It's hard for us to all stay under 15 minutes, so I wanted to leave some time for Q&A. I know no one's in this room, so if you guys can stay for the good discussion afterwards, that would be great. On my project, I just wanted to mention, although the official results are not ready, certainly what we're seeing includes over 90% of the providers that we've connected with, this is completely new information for them, over 90%. But they're very willing to learn. They think that this is an enhancement. They don't see this as a deterrent, so the demand is there. Second, regarding the pre-assessments, some examples. One center that fared very well compared to some of the others that we've seen. When we got to some of the questions regarding, for example, pesticides, when we asked, well, do you have some type of pesticide program that you conduct? They have a company that comes every month, the same, like every Thursday of the beginning Thursday of the month, and they spray. I said, well, do you know what they spray? No. Do you know? So if they don't know what they're spraying and the components of it, they said they spray Thursday evening. The kids are there by Friday morning. Any pesticide that I'm aware of has at least a 48 to 74 hour window before anyone, especially children, should be exposed. So those are just some of the things we're seeing. Now that is in the woods in the more affluent part of some of these communities. Of course, there's a wide range of what we've seen. We've seen certainly huge lead, huge mold and mildew issues, huge safety concerns, bleach and other chemicals just open on a first level of a bookshelf. Closets are supposed to be closed, but they've been open, again, with all the cleaning agents right there, just, you know, almost attracting kids, and a wide range of other things. But for the most part, we have been pleasantly surprised that, you know, there haven't been any that we've been wanting to close down like tomorrow, but there's certainly a wide range. And I'm sure as we get into this, hopefully we'll really start getting into some of those centers that really, really, like the phone call that we had where the lady just couldn't even invite us in. But
I have a question. You know, you talked about giving them an action plan after you do the training, and after listening to the lady from Philadelphia that was talking about all the money that had to be spent to do structural repairs and that sort of thing, I'm just wondering, you know, the education is really good,
yeah,
but is there enough in your program to kind of help them to address, you know, the issues that we saw in Philadelphia?
Oh, no, yeah, in ours, and this is one of the things that I wish I could give more of, but in that action plan, one of the things that we try our best to do, if it's a radon issue, for example, we have found that there is Keith Keemer in D.C., he's the indoor air quality guy, he's like the one staff member in D.C. in charge of air quality in D.C., he'll offer free radon test kits to a provider as long as they're a D.C. resident or more if needed. That's one little tiny, but at least it gives them a baseline of what they're dealing with. Then there's other cases where there's like mini grants or, you know, it's been extremely hard to find something that will just completely handle a remediation issue. But certainly the monetary, that's the biggest question. And even when you talk about radon, we've even had the question come up in our training, well, if I've never tested before and I've never been concerned about it before, what's the point of testing for it if I know for a fact I don't have potentially $1,800, $2,000 to remediate it? I've actually heard that multiple times.
Limited with costs, we didn't really have anything to use, but we hope